Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friends Show. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you doing?
Yeah, we're in a new reality now. I feel surprisingly the same, though.
Indeed. And I see already that the title of today's show, We Have a New Government, is something that is stoking controversy. Our first comment here was, what do you mean when you say new? We'll get into that in a minute. We're also here with Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Nick, Terence, doing well, thank you. Looking forward to your pearls of wisdom as I'm trying to understand where things are at the moment. I maybe by the minute go between optimism, maybe blind optimism, and on the other hand, much of a muchness.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, remember, pearls before swine, man.
Let us get into what we're actually going to be discussing today. And I'm just going to go through the cabinet. The first thing to note is that it was announced last night by President Cyril Ramaphosa sometime after 9 o'clock, 9:30, I think.
Oh, only about 50 minutes late.
Or later. Only about 50 minutes late. Let's just say that we have... We discussed the cabinet size in our meeting this morning. And Chris, I believe you used the phrase chonky, which I think is pretty accurate. Something like 43 deputy ministers and over 30 ministers, which is quite a lot of people. A very significant portion of actually all of the GNU MPs are in this cabinet. But be that as it may, let's discuss the various appointees. So, of course, the deputy president role remains with Paul Mashatile, so no change there. Going through the cabinet ministers, the agricultural minister is John Steenhuisen from the DA. The PAC has land reform. Siviwe Gorube from the DA has basic education. Solly Malatsi from the DA has communications and digital technology. The leader of the IFP, Vilenkosini Hlabisa, has cooperative governance and traditional affairs. Angie Motsweka, the former, I think she was the education minister beforehand, has been moved to defense and military veterans. The ANC keeps electricity and energy, science and technology, employment and labor. Enoch Godongwana stays the ANC finance minister. He now has two deputies, one of whom is from the DA, one of whom is from the ANC. And that's a pattern that's repeated across a lot of cabinet, is that where there is a DA deputy, there's also an ANC deputy. And that's one of the reasons that the cabinet is so massive. Dion George from the DA is in forest, fisheries, and the environment. Aaron Motsoaledi is in health. The ANC retains higher education, human settlements, international relations, and cooperation with Ronald Lamola, formerly the justice minister, moved there. The DA gets home affairs, led by Leon Schreiber. Gwede Mantashe stays the mining minister. ANC keeps planning and monitoring and evaluation. Police, although no longer Beki Cele, now Senzo Machunu, which is, I think, a good thing. The IFP gets public service and administration. The DA gets public works and infrastructure. The ANC gets ministry and the presidency, small business development, social development, trade, industry, and competition, which now has former Johannesburg Mayor Parks Tau rather than Ibrahim Patel. Barbara Creasy is in transport for the ANC. The ANC also retains water and sanitation, women, youth, and persons with disabilities. Patricia DeLille gets tourism. Peter Groenewald from the Freedom Front Plus, correctional services, Gayton McKenzie, sports, art, and agriculture. And then I think El Jamaha got one of the deputy minister positions, and the UDM also, I think, as well, got one of the deputy minister positions. So firstly, very big cabinet. Secondly, the ANC vastly outnumbers everyone else. I think they have something like 20 of the ministry positions. The DA has 6, the IFP 2, the PAC 1, the Freedom Front Plus 1, the PA 1, and Good 1. So that's something I think to take note of. I saw a interview on, I think it was Newsroom Africa, with Helen Ziller, where she was talking about this. she basically implied that the agreement hadn't really been stuck to the initial statement of intent, and that proportionality was completely out the window. But she basically said something along the lines of, well, we're going to see what we can do to make this work. DA leader John Steenhuisen said his party will use cabinet as posts for a vehicle to drive its election promises. He said South Africa's problems will not be solved overnight. He said, quote, as the DA takes up our rightful place at the cabinet table, the same priorities will continue to guide the work we do. He talked about how they have assumed a number of deputy minister positions. Quote, while historic events of the past month have challenged political leaders who respect the constitution to step up like never before, the challenge must also be met by the rest of society. With the DAs in government, you will be welcomed with an open door and an open hand. We know the time for confrontation is over. Ryan Kutsia, who was part of the DA negotiating team, wrote a column today talking about how this government of national unity will require major sacrifices from both the DA and the ANC. He said the task that John Steenhuisen and his intrepid band of DA ministers and deputy ministers have set themselves is enormous and complex, and now need the support of those who have been most vocal in demanding the DA make a go of it. The sustainable relationship between the ANC and DA in government will depend on the former accepting that it needs to share power and the latter respecting the ANC's much larger mandates. For both sides, that means sacrifice, painful sacrifice. There is some way to go before leaders, members, and supporters of either party fully internalize this reality, but it helps that both President Cyril Ramaphosa and John Steenhuisen seem to get it. So the next steps are firstly working out actually how the government will work in practice, how it will come to decisions and break deadlocks and decide on that kind of stuff, and also setting a policy agenda, which doesn't seem to be quite clear right now. There's much talk of a quote-unquote national dialogue to find the way forward for the government of national unity. So the battle of ideas, as it were, is not even close to finished. There is a lot of work to be done on making sure that South Africa does actually change its policies in a positive direction. But Terence, let me start with you here. A lot of stuff's happened. Firstly, you know, if I was the DA, I would be a little bit worried about the fact that every time they got a deputy minister position, that's also matched by an ANC deputy minister, almost as though the ANC couldn't quite bring itself to just accept that the DA might have a deputy minister here or there, that they needed an ANC deputy minister to keep an eye on them, because we don't want the minister being filled in for by some, you know, evil white monopoly capital or something like that. Also, at the same time, the negotiations have, shall we say, not been smooth. Do you think the parties have any chance of building a working relationship, or is this kind of antagonism going to continue?
Well, I think that what you've seen over the past couple of weeks, and I think with the announcement, is two impulses pushing against each other. The DA wanted as much influence as possible. The ANC wanted as much influence as possible for itself, and to keep the DA as at arm's length as far as it could, while both kind of realized that they needed the other. Going forward, look, I think that this is completely uncharted stuff. I don't think that the ANC fully appreciates that it is no longer a majority party. It has achieved the largest single plurality, but it doesn't have 50% plus one anymore. The idea that it represents the people and a sort of it has been validated by the democratic will of the majority no longer holds. And to which I would add that the notion that the electorate has sent a message that they demand cooperation or whatever, that's also incorrect. What happened was that people voted for a wider spread of parties and proportions that didn't produce a majority. So what is left then is to try and square the circle. As I say, this is not something that South Africa is used to. The whole constitution and the system of government was kind of written up with the idea that there was going to be a clear-cut winner. Rather like people have said, well, you know, we designed institutions for, for Nelson Mandela. We didn't foresee Jacob Zuma. Well, many of the problems that we experience now comes from precisely that line of thinking. Nelson Mandela was a fallible human being himself, so even at that point, it wasn't realistic. My own sense is that we are going to see months, if not years, of turbulence, and I think that the immediate future is going to be marked by how can we do each other in. We will, but I think that is a necessary part of the learning curve. It's not going to be easy, but anybody who has ever done anything anything challenging knows that is the definition. What is worth doing is often not lend itself to easy or quick solutions.
So there's obviously quite a lot of continuity in the fact that the ANC massively dominates the executive, and there's also some continuity in who fills each position. So, for example, Aaron Motsoaledi was in health for a time. Minister Ramakgopa has stayed with energy and electricity. There's also some changes, for example, Becky Cleda being out of police, which I think can only be a good thing, although things can always be worse. Parks Tau, who has a better reputation than some, getting in at trade, industry, and competition. So we may see some sort of change in that portfolio. And Chris, I know that area of policy is something that you're particularly interested in. So firstly, how much continuity do you think there will be in what the ANC does? Because we see a lot of the same faces. But at the same time, what do you make of what the opposition parties can do in the various portfolios? So agriculture, that's interesting that the DA's put their leader there. And apparently that was the ministry that convinced them to get on board with the deal. The DA wanted trade and industry and competition. But apparently Gwede Mantashe absolutely crushed that attempt by the DA. And so they settled for agriculture instead. Originally they were offered tourism, which they flat out rejected. So firstly, what potential upsides can you see there? Will the DA actually be able to do anything? Do you think they have any good ideas for agriculture? Basic education is an interesting one, because of course South Africa's education system is in a terrible state. But it's a difficult project to reform. South Africa's education system requires a lot of work. There's a lot of potential perhaps for good things to happen there, but also a lot of pitfalls that may stop you from being able to change anything. I suppose some of this all depends on, firstly, what this national dialogue produces, but what are your thoughts on what the policy direction is going to be based off of this cabinet?
I think generally policy direction favors the incumbents, and that's not only the case in terms of ministers, but also if you've generally deployed your cadres across the civil service and the public sector, regardless of whether the minister changes or the deputy. Of course, those individuals could influence their respective departments and those networks, but at the moment there's just so much weight in favor. If you think of it as a seesaw, there's just much more weight on the side of things remaining the same in terms of policy. So we'll need to see where there could be wins, where there has to be compromise. But even so, and maybe part of the DA's thinking in the negotiations is you try and establish a beachhead, and then you need to get those supply lines and all the support networks up and running. So you can't now get international government into cabinet and then don't have some sort of plan going forward. Of course, now really comes the rubber hits the road at this point in time. Just in terms of composition, it's interesting how if you take the GNU as just the totality of government, in terms of what the ANC got in terms of ministers at 62.5% of the total, and deputy ministers 76%. The DA gets 18.8% for ministers and 14% for deputies. So in terms of proportionality, concessions on the part of the DA quite strongly there, I think, in terms of numbers that they would have thought they were rightly should have had in terms of the election results. So can they parlay that in the future? Is that too much good faith on their part to say, look, we're trying to give up concessions to ensure that other smaller parties get positions and all that sort of thing? So then something to keep in mind in that regard. As well, I think you're right to highlight basic education. We all know the serious problems in that space in South Africa's public education sector. So lots of opportunity there if the DA could get some element of wins going. But also maybe on the part of the ANC thinking, you know, give it to the DA. They're going to fight so much with the unions. We don't need to worry much about reform. So then again, the DA looks bad in that regard. I think another portfolio for lots of opportunities, especially in home affairs, and then secondly, in terms of public works and infrastructure. If you look at the importance of infrastructure investment, getting private capital, taking that sort of punt on South Africa's future, investing in various projects like water infrastructure, that'll be vital going forward. So there is scope, I think, for things to be pushed in a positive direction. But I don't think anyone should be under any illusions as to how difficult a road lies ahead for pro-growth reforms to be implemented, because you get, as I mentioned, the positions in cabinet, the ministers, deputies, but getting everyone else to follow your tune, if you're singing a different tune to what came before, is going to be quite the mammoth task.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what portfolio you get in government. I think apart from women, children, and people with disabilities, I think that's the only one that actually basically does nothing particularly important. But, you know, you can at least do some things with probably most of the other ministerial positions. I think forestry, fisheries, and the environment is one where you can maybe, make some positive changes. Communications and digital technologies. I don't think digital stuff has ever really been the ANC's strong suit. So I think the DA definitely has an opportunity to make some changes there. We've seen some reforms in that direction already with like the auctioning of the digital spectrum. As you said, Chris, you know, I suspect basic education is going to be an absolute nightmare because, and this is going to be an interesting test of the government when it comes, as it begins to operate, inevitably SADTU, which is the big COSATU union in the education system, is going to clash with the DA minister in that portfolio. And when that happens, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, I'm not expecting the ANC to go out in full-throated support of the DA minister here, considering COSATU is their ally. But does the ANC maybe remain quiet? Or does it put its full weight on board with SADTU and completely undermine the minister, in which case there's not really going to be a lot of change? And maybe the DA should think but reconsider its role, its position in the government of national unity. Interesting thing that land reform and agriculture used to be one department and have now been split apart, with the PAC being getting land reform. So the PAC, of course, is very radical policies when it comes to land reform, very much in line with kind of the EFF, MK side of the spectrum. So one wonders whether this is a sort of purposely antagonistic relationship where the DA is going to be given agriculture and then set up against the PAC, who will have completely the opposite instincts in everything in agriculture. That's going to be an interesting dynamic to see where that plays out. Home affairs is, of course, a very important one, and it's one when, you know, it's sort of the go-to when people complain about government in South Africa. It's one of the things that people just talk about as being slow and inefficient. So a very big task to fix, but I think the DA, if it can show home affairs getting better in some way, will make win them a lot of points with voters. And of course, as you said, public works infrastructure has some interesting stuff. IFP getting cooperative governance and traditional affairs, I think, is a kind of a no-brainer. You know, the IFP has often been the party of traditional affairs, particularly when it comes to the rights of the sort of Zulu traditional leaders in KZN. But Terence, what do you make of what the sort of IFP and DA ministers will be able to do in their portfolios? Obviously, we don't exactly know how cabinet's going to work, and a lot of this depends on how, you know, what the dynamic of cabinet is. But what's your thoughts on this?
Okay, well, I think that first of all, you aren't given a sort of little fiefdom where you can do your own thing. There are many kind of filters and gatekeepers that function. One of them is the quality of the civil service, and that's something that the DA has expressed concerns about. So I think one thing to watch out for is what happens with the Directors General. Well, I understand that is a position that the President ultimately gets to pull. I think that will also be also give a sense of just, you know, how committed they are to actually seeing, well, the ANC is to seeing successful governance. You know, are you? But there again, I do think that there's also something else that needs to be acknowledged, that particularly at national government level, there are people who may be ANC inclined, but, you know, still, you know, have a, but have a great deal to contribute, you know, let's, you know, say competent cadres, if you like. How those dynamics play out will be important. Also, as you go down, you know, into the kind of bowels of the civil service, there are going to be questions of trade unions with an inbuilt hostility to the DA, but then also many civil servants who are effectively just shills for criminal enterprises now, organized crime, and you know whether they got there through some sort of cadre deployment. Let's just say the ANC is maybe fifth or sixth on their list of priorities about who they've got to keep sweet. So, you know, there's all of that, and that's a big thing. Three specifics. Digital technology, I think, can be extremely important because that is one of those issues which kind of exists outside the dinner table conversation of most of us. But for a lot of investors, that is a big, big problem for South Africa. It's that you want to set up call centers or whatever, but we just don't have the digital infrastructure for it. So that's one thing. So that's something the DA could get right. Basic education, my sense is that there is probably a constituency within the ANC that is likely to be more sympathetic to Miss to the DA incumbent, Miss Kuiva.
So they were Garuba.
Than we typically assume. I understand that there was actually a fairly good working relationship between Ms. Mosheka and the Western Cape, because you know they were stuck with a problem, and you know irrespective of what your political sympathies are, they realized that something like the Eastern Cape just didn't function. You know, what do you do about that? So I think that's one area where you'll see a lot of internal contestation in the ANC. Now, in Home Affairs, I do think that it's important to note Home Affairs today is not the Home Affairs of 15 years ago. A lot of that has been because things have been there's been some positive reform introduced, or the Home Affairs of 20 years ago. But I think that there are certain things that can shift the growth needle, getting visas right. And I think there's also something of great concern to a lot of people is border security. Now, I think that's often a proxy for everything's wrong in my life and it's the Zimbabweans that are the problem. But I do think that there certainly is an issue with that border being wide open, and we need a response to it in a sensible immigration policy. If Dr. Schreiber can get that right, I think that will stand him in very good in very good stead. But remember also that everything that happens, there is a principle of sort of cabinet responsibility. So expect major bun fights there.
Exactly. I think there's an enormous amount of petty corruption in Home Affairs. When I say petty corruption, I mean rather than the sort of big contract stuff, which I'm sure also happens to a fair amount. But in a lot of ways, there's a lot of corruption of the individual officials being bribed to jump people through queues or issue false visas or that kind of thing. So there's a lot of opportunity to clear up some of that stuff if you can, because that also tends to not be as politically difficult to do if you're taking care of the small fries. Chris, what do you make of Gate McKenzie's get out of this? He's gotten sports, arts and culture. So I'm sure Gaten is very happy that he is a minister. There was, of course, he did say that we are only in this for power and that he's walking away from the GNU if he doesn't get a ministry. But at the same time, let's just say sports, arts and culture is not a super powerful ministry.
Yeah, and doesn't really pull on the... Sorry, Terrence.
You can hit the ground running, apparently.
That particular portfolio doesn't fall under either of his priority areas of policing or home affairs. So was it were those red lines, or was it just, give me some sort of cabinet position and then I'm satisfied? I mean, there is an opportunity here, given how much arguably the arts and culture element has been neglected by previous governments, support for emerging artists, all that sort of thing. There is an opportunity here for McKenzie to build up a lot of goodwill, possibly, and again similar maybe to Home Affairs, if you interact on that daily basis with that kind of department, it just builds that regularity. If it's positive, of course, it's a positive sentiment. If it's negative, you know. Nick? Sorry, you wanted to jump in.
Terrence, no, I don't.
I just want to mention something on health at some point.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, just on Department of Health and the return of Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. Really, one person along with Olive Shoshana for many years who pushed strongly for the NHI, various white and green papers, pilot projects. So maybe now a legacy consideration for him to want to oversee the implementation of that project now that the bill was signed, is now the act, of course, after it was signed before the elections. So just something to keep on an eye on there. Obviously, one hopes that negative or destructive policy, if it is implemented, it's done at least in some sort of watered down way, something that the NHI, I think, is. But I wonder how much budget health is going to get, how much of a push there will be now for something as contentious as the NHI, which in terms of negotiations between the ANC and the DA, it might be one of those where they just decide we're too far apart. Let's see what wins we can get without throwing it out either way or going for it completely in terms of support. So, yeah, keep an eye on that, especially. I thought Joe Pachla, given that he was the former Minister of Health and he did an okay job in that department, relatively speaking, would remain there. So a demotion for him to deputy, another return of Motsoaledi.
Go ahead, James.
I would just like to come in here. You know, I think that an issue like NHI is one where their positions are fairly irreconcilable. Mm. But I think it's also one of those that is a big issue and it's very much in the public mind. So it's one that if this thing works, they could perhaps say, well, you know, okay, we're not going to agree on this, but we can agree that we need the foundations of the public healthcare system to work. So that's the kind of thing that you can move forward on and say, well, okay, look, the ANC will say, well, we won't start to, you know, cap people's salaries and, you know, whatever, until we can get to that point. The DA could then support them on that. And that's at least something where there could be some sort of semblance of cooperation.
And I think it's also a sign for the DA for them maybe to get out, as if NHI just blunders ahead exactly as before, as though nothing has changed, then that will be a sign perhaps that they are not really getting anything out of this arrangement. At the very least, there has to be some sort of change to the policy there. We'll see. So, Terrence, one of the things I wanted to ask you for your thoughts on was what I think is in many ways actually kind of the, not super important, but still very interesting cabinet appointments, which, of course, is Peter Groenewald from the Freedom Front Plus getting correctional services. And this is interesting for a number of reasons, one of which is that it's not impossible that Jacob Zuma or people close to him will go to jail in the next couple of years. In which case, we're going to have a very different situation to last time when Jacob Zuma simply got let out because of his, you know, the fact that he was so sick, apparently, but then went on to run a election campaign. Anyway, I kind of get the feeling that, you know, this is one of those ministries where it's kind of out of the way. People usually don't talk about it that much. And now Ramaphosa will be able to claim ignorance when Jacob Zuma's appeal for medical parole is denied this time, assuming he does somehow end up back in the prison system. What do you make of all that?
I think that one has to look carefully at the relationship between the ANC and the Freedom Front Plus and the Freedom Front before it, going back to Constant Viljoen. Yeah, in a way, they had a kind of symbiotic relationship. Constant Viljoen was the one guy who could probably have derailed the transition, and he didn't. And brought in a very important, although numerically small, constituency. Now, the Freedom Front Plus, I think, is they have a niche appeal. They are, you know, let's say, in some ways, the height of political incorrectness. But I think they've also learned how to operate very well in the post-apartheid system. And I think that maybe because they don't sort of swim in the ANC's pool, or, you know, have whatever metaphor you want, they're not competing with them for votes. And because of Grunewald's, you know, very extended service as a parliamentarian, I think that there is a, you know, there is a great deal of respect there. Now, correctional services is kind of the one security portfolio. It's probably the most junior of them. It's the one that the ANC was sort of willing to part with. But yeah, you know, if this becomes a case of Zuma going to prison or someone politically sensitive, I think this will give the ANC a way to kind of say, well, you know, this isn't really something we can influence. You know, you
have to speak to the words.
Yeah, plausible deniability. And you know, Peter Grunewald is an imposing character. I must say he's got a sort of intellectual toughness that I think must be very intimidating. So he's probably quite well suited for that job.
That being said, South Africa's prisons are, shall we say, not well run. So it's also going to be quite the daunting task to try and turn those around.
Yeah, no, that's cleaning out the Augean stables.
Yeah, definitely. The level of human rights abuse that goes on in those things, not just, you know, you've got guards who are attacked, you've got prisoners who are badly treated, you've got prisoners who escape, you've got just complete chaos. So anything that can be done to improve our prison situation, I think, would be very good. Because you know, we're not going to even begin, I think, to fix some of our crime problems if our prisons aren't working.
Absolutely.
Chris, any final thoughts on this whole thing? I think the IFP is probably also reasonably happy with the two posts that it got. It seems like they will be able to maybe make this solidify their gains in KZN now from this, particularly with MK facing the prospect of not having any patronage whatsoever.
And even more than the ministerial post, but also deputy minister. So the chief whip, Naren Singh, one of the deputy ministers now in forestry, fisheries, and in the environment, and then also in transport, Nkuleko Hlengwa, the national spokesperson, getting that particular deputy ministerial position. So I think the IFP played their hand well, especially given the damage that MK wrought to them and other political parties and KZN. Last note, just on international relations, foreign policy, given now the change in that particular department with Ronald Lamola taking over from Naledi Pandor, does South Africa's foreign policy go in a bit more of a pragmatic direction now versus where it was more maybe ideologically driven beforehand? Maybe there's an opportunity and possible change in that regard. And then last point on trade and industry, given that is an interest area of mine, maybe the worst case scenario is that Parks Tau sort of wants to protect the legacy of Patel and try and keep some of the projects and policies there, maybe not to upend the status quo too much. I think partly why there was so much pushback against that, you know, ostensibly for reasons that would undermine ANC's transformation agenda. But there are lots of opportunities for patronage in DTIC, local manufacturing, local subsidies, all those protectionist sort of sharing of patronage that could have been the main motivator. So let's see what happens there, because if you get that especially right, not in terms of silver bullets solving things, but just doing the basics, there's so much scope for pushing South Africa's growth rate higher. So let's see.
Indeed. All right. Obviously much more to follow as we see how this thing develops in practice, but at least we now have the sort of basic rules of the game. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. We will, of course, continue to push for what we think are the solutions to South Africa's problems, decentralization, liberalization, that kind of thing across many spheres of government. And I hope that this government will provide some of those policies, because they will actually genuinely help South Africans of all races, cultures, economic backgrounds, whatever you want to divide us on. We really do need some serious change in some of those areas, and us as part of civil society, and I'm sure many other groups as well, will hopefully hold government to this new government to account on those fronts and keep pushing for real change, because the status quo, it cannot stand. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We'll see you tomorrow on the Daily French Show. Have a good one.